Welcome back one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola and very excited to be joined today on a pretty wild random day of news by one Wozni Lambre. Woz, back. Welcome back to the show.
What's going on, John? Very happy to be back with you, brother.
Glad to have you here. We got some crazy stuff to jump into with corruption in the Supreme Court. I know it sounds crazy to even hint at it, but there is some evidence. The Dominion lawsuit is looking like the testimony process is going to be a lot more exciting than I probably would have assumed. We've got right wingers running scared from the reaction from reasonable people to their anti-abortion legislation, and Marjorie Greene attacking New York City and getting whomped as a result of that. So I'm definitely here for that. Also, if you stick around for the aftermath, so if you're on the podcast, on your platforms, understand there's more to the show that gets uploaded on YouTube and stuff like that. We've got the rise of the Furbies. We all knew it was coming. It just was delayed by a couple of decades. And a community of men on Reddit who just wish they were a little bit longer. We're going to be profiling their quest to become the men they wish they were and some of the damage done down south when they try. By the way, also today was, I don't know, are you familiar with in Tennessee the three state legislators that might be kicked out as a result of their involvement in the protest that was going on earlier, like a 4 or 5 days ago?
I am not, but I'm sure you keep me abreast.
I will. Regrettably throughout this week, it has not become the national story that I thought it should be, but the actual vote to kick out Representatives Justin Jones, Gloria Johnson, and Justin Pearson is, I think they're in the process of trying to do it right now. So that might be happening live on the show. We're going to be trying to keep track of that as we jump into a lot of other stuff. But along the way, if you want to reach out to Woz or myself, you can send us tweets, comments, super chats, all that, and we'll respond as we go. And you'll have a chance at a $100 Blue Apron gift card with a particularly insightful or witty comment. So hit us with your best shot. With all that said, Woz, you ready to jump into some news?
Let's do it, brother.
Let's do it. Okay. Earlier today, ProPublica came out with, I think, one of the most fascinating bits of journalism looking at the Supreme Court that I have seen in literally years. And it profiles corruption being alleged against this guy, Clarence Thomas. When I say alleged, I mean they have a ton of evidence. They've done exhaustive research. And what they have uncovered, like everybody is saying, it has created a crisis of legitimacy on the court. I personally think that we've been in that since the Kavanaugh process. And I have no doubt that the status quo will be returned to in due course. But if we had any hope of reigning in the Supreme Court, getting any sort of like actual ethical guidelines, anything like that, this is the opportunity for it. And we're going to give the details as revealed by ProPublica. So first of all, they start off by revealing that in June of 2019, right after the Supreme Court released its final opinion of the term, obviously Clarence Thomas was exhausted from all the work. You know, they do occasionally meet and briefly do stuff. He then boarded a large private jet headed to Indonesia. He and his wife were going on vacation. 9 days of island hopping in the archipelago on a super yacht staffed by a whole bunch of private chefs and servants and attendants and all of that. Now, you might be wondering, how does a Supreme Court justice pay for this? Well, in this case, they do not. If he had paid for the 162-foot yacht and the trip and all of that, it could have cost more than $500,000. But he didn't have to. Because in addition to being, you know, very powerful in his own right as a member of the Supreme Court, he also has powerful friends, including real estate magnate and Republican megadonor Harlan Crow. I swear that's his actual name. You're probably thinking, well, that sounds like a villain you'd come up with in a story about political corruption. It does sound that way, doesn't it? No, he's real. He owned the jet. He owned the yacht. And he gave them to the Supreme Court justice for his use for 9 days. That, though, is not what this story is about. Or I should say, that's just one of the many things this story is about. Because for more than 2 decades, apparently, Thomas has been accepting luxury trips virtually every year from Harlan Crow. He flies on Crow's Bombardier Global 5000 jet. He's gone to the Bohemian Grove, ooh, an exclusive California all-male retreat, to Crow's sprawling ranch in East Texas. He typically spends at least a week every summer at Crow's private resort in the Adirondacks. The extended frequency of these trips There's no known precedent in the Supreme Court for anyone accepting one of these trips, let alone decades of these trips. They're not on Thomas's financial disclosures. And I'm gonna jump to the sauciest part of this. While there is very little like sort of ethical guidelines for Supreme Court justices, they do still have to register these sorts of gifts. Anything over, I believe it's $450. And so I think the half million super yacht trip probably qualifies. These two decades of trips, that's what ProPublica has been able to find so far with the research. God only knows what else has been going on for decades. And Thomas has not said anything about this historically. And in response to this research, he is not responding to any questions about this obvious corruption. Wazzy, what do you think?
Yeah, it's people should not be surprised to learn that many people on the, or Clarence Thomas specifically, is a corrupt individual. I don't think anybody would be surprised. I think a normal person who spends, you know, a normal amount of time thinking about politics probably thinks like somebody as important as Clarence Thomas makes a lot of money, and so therefore this would be normal. And no, this guy is a civil servant. I think the way our culture operates is that we think of everybody who is in the news as a celebrity, and so therefore super rich. It's like, no, this guy is a public servant, okay? This guy works for the government. He works for us. He's not some, he shouldn't be operating like some fat cat. And you know, what I would say to people is that the Supreme Court is barely a legitimate entity. It's one of the most anti-democratic entities that exists. There is no institution in public life that is as influential, as powerful, and is as anti-democratic, meaning nobody votes for these people and they have lifetime appointments, right? And I think progressives, especially over the last 50 years or so, have tended on having a positive view of the Supreme Court, because we think about stuff like Roe v. Wade, affirmative action, Brown v. Board of Ed, these Supreme Court cases that have opened up things for people as far as like civil liberties and civil rights. But that is not the history of this court. That's like a 30-year little nugget of time, as compared to the overwhelming majority of the history of this court has been extremely corrupt, extremely anti-democratic, extremely reactionary. As far as I'm concerned, we could get rid of the Supreme Court tomorrow and it would be no sweat off my back, because that institution has been, you know, basically a thorn in the side of the people since its inception.
Yeah. It's generally served as one of the last defenses for the status quo.
Yep.
Like if you know, if the peasants get out of hand and finally overcome all of the structural hurdles to their will being reflected in public policy, well then don't worry, because we've got to get out of democracy free card in the Supreme Court. Generally, that is how it is served. And so for Thomas, we're gonna see. Is he going to respond to this at all? Will there be, I mean, the fact that the Republicans control Congress and will not give a damn about this. I mean, consider, what if it was Hunter Biden that was taking these trips? Like, come on. Probably nothing will happen, but great work by ProPublica. And we've actually still got a couple of angles of this to cover. The guy doing all of the obvious bribing of Clarence Thomas, Harlan Crow, he has responded to the allegations made by ProPublica. He says that he'd extended, quote, hospitality to the Thomases, quote, over the years, but said that Thomas never asked for any of it. And it was, quote, no different from the hospitality we've extended to our many other dear friends. That is either, as all statements are, a lie or the truth. I'm leaning towards lie, but if it is the truth, think about what Harlan Crow is revealing there. Oh no, when I give exclusive use to my super yacht to a Supreme Court justice, that's like all of my other interactions with my other friends who are in their own way as powerful and well-connected as a Supreme Court justice. So what he is describing there, if he's being honest, is a completely busted corrupt system, but he's probably also lying. You'll notice he says over the years, he's not providing any additional detail to this story that ProPublica didn't find. He's only confirming that they are generally true. Are there other trips that they haven't profiled? Are there other gifts that they haven't profiled? Harlan Crow isn't saying. He also said, by the way, that he and his wife have never discussed a pending or lower court case with Thomas. Quote, we have never sought to influence Justice Thomas on any legal or political issue. And I find that to be an interesting claim. I would love to have the mental malleability that I could twist my lobes into believing that that's true. But I want to put forward a few inconvenient facts first. And then we see if you can accept what Harlan Crow was saying there. So bear in mind, in 2011, Politico revealed that Crow had given $500,000 to a Tea Party group founded by Ginny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, which also paid her a $120,000 salary. So more money than the vast, vast, vast majority of nonprofits will ever get across multiple decades of operating were given to the wife of the Supreme Court Justice in one fell swoop. She becomes, you know, independently quite well off as a result of that. He once gave Clarence Thomas a Bible owned by Frederick Douglass that was worth $19,000. And also, this is a specific stuff that he's doing, but you need to also understand who Harlan Crow is. He is described by ProPublica as an influential figure in pro-business conservative politics. He has spent millions of dollars on ideological efforts to shape the law and the judiciary, including donations to the Federalist Society and millions of dollars to other groups dedicated to what they call tort reform and conservative jurisprudence. And so now let's see if we can get to where Harlan Crow wants us to be. This is a guy who for literally decades has done everything he can and given everything he can to influence the judiciary to move in a right pro-business direction. But when he has a justice at his private all-male retreat, they don't talk shop. He'll do anything, donate millions to these groups. But when he has Clarence Thomas, I mean, they're not gonna sully a good time with talk about pending legislation or anything. If you wanna believe that, you go right ahead and believe that. That, I think, to a reasonable person sounds like the craziest thing they've ever heard. Waz, what do you think?
I mean, nobody's gonna think that this isn't what it is. I think we tend to underestimate the citizenry and their general understanding of how politics work. I mean, by we, I mean people like us, John, people who are sort of in the muck of this stuff on a day to day. Anybody can read this story and understand that this is classic. This is textbook corruption. This isn't, you know, you gotta dig beneath the surface. This would make for a horrible conspiracy thriller. This is just textbook pay for play corruption. This is all this is. I think the question is whether people think this is just what the system is. This is normal. This is how it's supposed to operate. This is how it's designed to operate. That's what the question is for me. I wonder how upset people will actually be about this. I think there used to be a time where the Supreme Court actually cared about the court of public opinion, where they were actually felt a bit insecure in their standing and their legitimacy. I wonder if that's still the case. Like in a normal operating system, this guy would be quitting today. By the end of day, he would have handed in his papers.
Yeah. And by the way, even today, if it was Sotomayor was going on a super yacht with George Soros, trying to figure out, would they have an issue with that? I don't know. We'll return to it at some point. But no, the politicians are not gonna have literally any problem with this. What we just described, that relationship between an incredibly wealthy mega donor and a Supreme Court justice, is exactly what our politics is supposed to be from their point of view. It's their club. They're in that club, or they hope to become, to get into that club by doing the bidding of that club. And the rest of you are supposed to, I don't know, suffer and die. It doesn't matter. We'll occasionally do a story about M&Ms and whether they're sexy enough. That's what American politics is supposed to be. Clarence Thomas just didn't do a good enough job, I guess, of hiding it, that some of his flight records were able to be tracked down and everything. The pushback has begun. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez responded to ProPublica's bombshell reporting on Clarence Thomas and Harlan Crow Esquire by saying, this is beyond party or partisanship. This degree of corruption is shocking, almost cartoonish, Thomas must be impeached, barring some dramatic change. This is what the Roberts Court will be known for: rank corruption, erosion of democracy, and the stripping of human rights. She's not the only one, by the way. Ted Lieu, representative of California, says, is Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas corrupt? I don't know, but his secretive actions absolutely have the appearance of corruption. For the good of the country, he should resign. And by the way of Sheldon Whitehouse, senator, saying, this cries out for the kind of independent investigation that the Supreme Court, and only the Supreme Court, across the entire government refuses to perform. He has sponsored legislation that would direct the court to adopt an ethics code. But whether you're talking about just the actual financial position of currently serving Supreme Court justices, you could point to this. You could point to, for instance, Kavanaugh, who prior to becoming a justice had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt that just all of a sudden they were gone. Nobody knows how, and it's impolite of you to ask. Or the process by which people get onto the Supreme Court. Why is Kavanaugh there in the first place? Well, because Republican senators decided that, like, we just would prefer if there were more Republicans, so we're just gonna fundamentally change the way that you choose justices. So I think they are totally right that this is what this court will be known for, an absolute crisis of legitimacy. How the justices are chosen, how they're influenced by money, the lies they tell during their nomination process, the complete lack of interest in anything, even like incredibly well settled precedent, gone purely to accomplish right wing culture war ends. I think that she is totally right that that's what this period is gonna be known for. I don't necessarily have a lot of hope that he's gonna be kicked off, though, certainly not. And they would still have a majority in the Supreme Court, but they're not gonna let that stop them. Waz, any final thoughts about this?
I mean, this kind of stuff definitely puts a strain on the animating order of the system. I think it depends on where you sit. That can be a good or bad thing. I think if you're somebody who's inclined to think we need to burn this entire thing down, this is a great thing. This proves how unusable our system, like, it's just good for nothing. There's like, we need to do something else. If you're of that mind, this is more proof in that case. If you are, you know, some of the fat cats and power brokers of our system, you gotta be looking at this like, this is, man, we are butt naked out here. We are exposed with something like this. And so, you know, I wonder what'll come of this.
Yeah. I mean, will Fox even talk about it? Because they would have to defend him if they did talk about it. Do they want to tell their base, the base that they say, hey, we're all against the elites together. Remember, I'm a populist. Populism. It's totally cool, by the way, for a Supreme Court justice to be given literally millions of dollars worth of extensive international vacations over the course of decades, as well as thousands and thousands of dollars worth of Frederick Douglass's personal effects. That's what they believe. Will they actually say that on TV? Stay tuned, I guess. Not to Fox, though. We'll let you know if they do. Anyway, we have to take our first break of the show. I didn't think that we would have quite so much to say about that. But when we come back, we're gonna be talking about the Dominion versus Fox News lawsuit. Basically, all of the highest profile players are gonna be testifying, and we're gonna give you the details after this. On the chat, Axie Mom says, John making a yes, so interesting face while Waz talks sports. I asked him about it. I asked him before the show if he follows professional wrestling. He doesn't. We could have had a back and forth on that, but none of these real sports, I'm not that interested in them. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump into more fascinating news? The witness list in the Dominion versus Fox News $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit has got some major big hitters added to it. Both Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch can apparently be forced to testify, according to the judge overseeing the trial that was announced just yesterday. So obviously having, you know, the absolute top of the top brass for Fox is an important part, testifying is an important part of this. But as we'll get to, they also have figured quite prominently in some of the text and email revelations that have come out of this. And I can't wait to see them asked about some of the things they said in the wake of the 2020 election. But it will not just be the ownership. You also have, after months and months of Fox desperately trying to stop their hosts from having to testify. That effort has apparently utterly fallen apart. And so flame on. You're gonna have Tucker Carlson, Maria Bartiromo, Sean Hannity, whatever is left of Jeanine Pirro, and Brett Baer all testifying in this lawsuit. And look, getting them in an actual courtroom situation where there are consequences to the lies they tell is going to be fascinating, okay? Because we know in the past, even when it's not them, when something related to their shows ends up in an actual courtroom situation, then all of a sudden you get the truth. You have people working or, you know, in leadership over Tucker Carlson admitting that, like, no, he's not the news. He doesn't tell the truth. This is a character. It's exaggeration. It's satire for effect or whatever. They totally pull the veil back because they have to. There are legal consequences to lying. But now we're gonna have the actual host. Was Sean Hannity there? Sean Hannity's there too. Tucker Carlson, Maria Bartiromo, like, is going to have to respond to some of the absolutely devastating things that Fox leadership and her own EP saying that she should never be on live TV. So that's gonna be fun. But Jeanine Pirro, like, assuming that she passes the breathalyzer test on the way into the court, God only knows what she could end up revealing. So I'm gonna get to some of the specific things that I'd like to see follow-ups on. But Waz, I don't know how much you've been following the brewing lawsuit there, but it is going to be like, it has the potential for it to be everything that I think a lot of people have been hoping.
Yeah, this is the real game. I'm not gonna lie. I think the Southern District of New York's case against Trump is kind of weak sauce. What they got in Georgia, that's some real stuff. This New York thing is kind of BS. This Fox News case is real. This is real. This is the real game. Because the only thing these folks ever respond to is the threat of losing money. And there's real money on the line, and it goes at the heart of their business model. Like, that's what's being threatened here. For years, we've all talked about how these guys sort of walk the line of being a news network. And by that, we just mean they're not a news network. They're just not.
Yeah.
They have the patina of one. They put up fancy chyrons and, you know, their hosts wear these very bespoke suits and dresses, but they do not operate as a news entity. And to have their emails and phone records subpoenaed and to see their how these people actually correspond to each other as it pertains to the work that they're doing, this is the ball game, John. This is huge.
Yeah, I mean, and the $1.6 billion, I would imagine you have to run a lot of MyPillow ads to generate $1.6 billion in
revenue. A lot of penis pills got to get sold.
A lot of Roseanne Barr specials have to be produced and promoted. Yeah, man, these are there. Oh God, what a business model. So yeah, I agree. I think that this is, you know, theoretically an existential threat. That said, it is Fox News. They're powerful. They're well connected. So please do not go into this expecting that, oh, they're done. First of all, because generally things don't end up the way they should. Second of all, because if they were destroyed, whatever came after them would definitely be worse. But anyway, I do want to remind people of a few of the things that might make an appearance during the Dominion lawsuit. First of all, there was Rupert Murdoch being asked whether people like Sean Hannity, Jeanine Pirro, Maria Bartiromo, and Lou Dobbs had promoted in falsehoods about the 2020 election. And he said, and I quote, yes, they endorsed. This was not them repeating other people's claims, according to Rupert Murdoch. This was not them just bringing on guests that said things that were insane. They personally endorsed these falsehoods. So let's be clear about that. Let's see. You have Murdoch asking Suzanne Scott, the CEO of Fox News, to make Hannity say something supportive of Lindsey Graham so that, quote, we cannot lose the Senate if at all possible. I mean, again, like to what you were saying about, you know, the veneer of operating a news network, their entire purpose is to get one party elected, just to be very clear. And they are not upfront about that. So then, of course, you also have Tucker. You have Tucker telling Hannity that one of their reporters needs to be fired for an accurate fact check, and explicitly talking about the business reasons behind doing these things and spreading these lies. Quote, do the executives understand how much credibility and trust we've lost with our audience? We're playing with fire for real. An alternative like Newsmax can be devastating to us. He is saying we have to lie better because if we don't, we will lose business. That's the entire Dominion case in one text message to Sean Hannity. So anyway, I can't wait to see it. I would love, it bears less, I think, on what happened. But if they could ask Tucker Carlson about all his quotes about how happy he is that soon he'll be able to ignore Trump. I hate him passionately. He's gonna be less powerful soon. If only we can get to Joe Biden's inauguration, if he could save us. I just want some quotes on that to throw in Tucker Carlson's face and his fans' faces for the rest of their lives. Any final thoughts, Waz?
Listen, man, I think the best part about this is that we've heard for years, Sam Cedar, who we all know, he's talked about, he met Hannity and Hannity was just like, yeah, it was just a joke, right? Like, it's just a game. We're just doing we're just performing the game. And for years, people who have known Tucker Carlson is just like, this is what he's doing on TV is an act. He's performing an act. It's no different than a comedian who goes on stage and gives you, you know, a solid hour of material they've been working on. That's what Tucker Carlson is doing. We've known this forever, but to see it in plain English, where these guys are just like, no, I think Trump is demonic. Who cares? We got to support him on air. It's good for the ratings.
He's a failure for business.
That's the part that's crazy.
Yeah, 100%. K-Chan says they'd like to have a segment where Jon Stewart asks Fox questions. I would like to have Jon Stewart be the person doing the witness like cross-examination during the Dominion lawsuit. Probably not gonna happen that way. With Republicans losing election after election around the country, largely for their insane, radically out of step positions on issues like abortion, I think more and more Republicans are starting to get worried about where this is leading. And one of them is Ann Coulter, who warned Republicans, saying the demand for anti-abortion legislation just cost Republicans another crucial race. That's the Wisconsin state Supreme Court race that we talked about yesterday on the show. Pro-lifers, we won. Abortion is not a constitutional right anymore. Please stop pushing strict limits on abortion or there will be no Republicans left. So that is simultaneously a couple of different things. One, is it good political advice? I think almost certainly, because she admits what so many Republicans pretend to not understand, that their position on abortion is not popular. It has never been popular in living memory. People do not support it. And to the extent that they know this is what Republicans are trying to do, they oppose the Republicans. So I think that she's accurate there. It also, by the way, reveals how little does Ann Coulter clearly care about pro-life legislation in the movement. No, it was a convenient thing. We got it. Like, can we move on now? I don't care about the limitations or whatever. I don't care about this topic that me and people like me have used as a political weapon for decades. It was all a scam. They believe that the religious right are rubes and they used them. Ann Coulter doesn't care if a random 18-year-old is forced to bear a child in Tennessee. She cares about what her taxes are. And she used the former to make sure that the latter was low. That's all this is. What do you think, Waz?
Yeah, Ann Coulter is not a poor person. We know that. So we know where her interests lie. But also, I think she understands that, like, the playbook that wins is racism. The anti-immigrant stuff. Let's stick to the playbook, guys. It's been working for 50 years now, right? We kicked all these country club people out of the party 50 years ago. All of these quote unquote Rockefeller Republicans and moderates. We're done with that. But we got the party we want. It's all xenophobia, racism, anti-immigration. Stick to the basics, John. Stop with this abortion crap. This is stuff that actually people actually care about. Stick to the basics, stick to the racism.
Yeah, look, I remember when the leak of Roe v. Wade, the decision to destroy Roe v. Wade came out. And after it, like, all the Republicans were like, but that doesn't mean we're gonna do anything more. Don't freak out, everybody, during the election. Like, this is all we want. We're not gonna do anything. And then ever since then, in states around the country, they've been trying to make it illegal. They're doing it in Florida right now. They're doing it everywhere. And the reason they were like, whoa, 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 isn't that some of them didn't still want to go farther. A lot of them think that they need to for the purposes of like motivating their primary base and everything. It's because they know the polling as well as we do. These are not popular positions, even in right-wing states. I will remind you of how that Kansas constitutional amendment went, not the way they wanted. She's not the only person, by the way, warning the Republicans. So the right-wing posted, serious political parties have one job, win general elections. The Republican Party is currently not a serious party, and it won't be until it kicks its Trump MAGA habit. Right now, it's more of a grievance social club. It's fun, but useless. We need change. That is, I think, a very accurate read of the entire thing. They are not a serious political party, and they're not interested in winning actual elections. They're barely even trying anymore. They're trying to rig things so that they don't have to, i.e. Wisconsin. In any event, while people like Ann Coulter are trying to save the Republicans from themselves, all over the country, other Republicans are doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on these incredibly unpopular decisions, including Idaho, which just became the first state to implement an interstate travel restriction on abortion care, which, look, we'll give you the details. But basically, what it means is they have done everything they can to make abortion illegal inside of their state. And then they realized that there are other places that aren't Idaho, and they'd really like it for it to be legal in those places. And while they're not technically in charge, they're gonna see if they can be in effect. Governor Brad Little signed a law Wednesday evening that bans minors from traveling out of state for abortions without parental consent. The law creates a new felony crime called abortion trafficking. Okay, that, by the way, comes with, it's a felony offense punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison. 2 to 5 years in prison for helping someone go to a different place with different laws and do something that is 100% legal and has been for half a century. That is what they call a novel legal theory. Now, of course, we have a conservative supermajority in the Supreme Court that has been chosen very specifically for their right-wing ideological positions. So I guess you can come up with anything you want in this current context, but I don't think people who are serious about the law think that there's anything to this. Waz, what do you think?
This is politicians cosplaying as lawmakers, to be honest. How do you even enforce something like this? If somebody takes an at-home pregnancy test, then goes and gets an abortion somewhere, how in the hell are the cops supposed to know about this? Maybe they should, make that illegal. You know, at-home pregnancy tests. Parents, if you're trying to, future parents, if you're trying to get pregnant, going to a doctor. You should have to share your medical information with the police and elected official. This is, it's insanity. It's just posturing. They know they can't enforce this. Nobody's ever gonna be arrested under this law, but it makes them look tough and it makes them look like they're serving the needs of their people. But we know what this is. This is just posturing.
Yeah. Look, like I said a long time ago, I'm all for going to blue states bordering red states that have outlawed abortion, and going to all of the abortion clinics, and then crowdfunding to produce 20 or 30 of the world's largest balls of twine, and then setting those up as tourist attractions. Because you can drive a youngster across the state borders to go see that. And then you go and you're taking pictures, and if they wander off to a clinic next door, that has nothing to do with you. You're there for the ball of twine. It's a national tradition. So anyway, does what I just said make a lot of legal sense? Not necessarily, but does it make as much sense as what the Republicans in Idaho are doing? I would argue more, actually. And I would be perfectly happy leading the effort to raise money for those balls of twine. Balls of freedom twine is what we're gonna call them, actually. In any event, that isn't the only thing that Idaho's been up to. Idaho, by the way, I believe it was North Carolina yesterday, is a state long known for having no actual problems that need to be fixed. So it's perfectly fine that they're getting up to all this. Banning the interstate stuff. Also, the nation's most punitive ban on gender affirming care for transgender youth, that was passed yesterday as well. It would make providing such care to a trans person under the age of 18 a felony with a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. It also bans gender affirming surgery from being performed on trans minors, though such surgeries aren't performed on minors. The bill also bans doctors from prescribing puberty blockers and hormone replacement therapy to people under the age of 18. But they will go even one step further than that. They also restrict trans women and girls, but not trans men and boys from participating in sports. They ban trans students from participating in women's and girls' sports from kindergarten through college, with a Republican-controlled legislature overriding a previous veto by the Democratic governor. This is Kansas, by the way, here. So how are they gonna do this? I mean, how are they even going to know? Oh, they're going to look into it, quite literally. Representative Barbara Wassinger, who introduced legislation earlier this year, was asked to explain how you would enforce this sort of prohibition. The Republican answered that enforcement would happen during a student athlete's, quote, sports physical. However, when Wassinger was pressed further by a Democrat whether that meant, quote, a genital inspection, she said she couldn't recall. Well, if it does, so I understand why you don't wanna say that that's what they're gonna do. I think we all understand why you don't wanna say that. But if it doesn't, then how would they know? Under your plan to have it be during the physical, how would they know? How would they know, Wassinger? You know exactly how they would know. This is a license to inspect the genitals of teens to say whether they can play like table tennis or something. That is what they're setting up here, Waz.
Yeah, and this is about as sad as and depraved as it gets in their anti-trans crusade. That's what it is. This is a crusade against trans people, because they seem to have gotten it in their heads that they can score political points and that people ultimately care about this more than the things that are actually affecting their lives materially. I'm pretty sure, I don't quote me on this stat, but I'm pretty sure less than 2% of the population are trans people. So what does that mean in practice, guys? Nobody in these municipalities are interacting with trans people ever. At a certain point, they're not gonna be able to use this as a wedge issue. People aren't every day coming into contact and their lives being ruined and corrupted by trans people. This is a boogie monster. There aren't this huge population of quote unquote trans athletes ruining youth sports. It doesn't exist. This is a made up issue. Like it's so fake. And I think eventually people are gonna realize like, man, like, these guys really only want to talk about trans people, and I don't see this ever occurring out in society. It's not to say that trans people don't exist, they do. But the extent to which that every single law, every time these people get on TV, every time their whole messaging is about eliminating this alleged trans problem, like, this is craziness.
Yeah, well, it's absurd. Obviously, it's total misinformation. None of this is actually happening.
It's fake. Like,
you follow sports?
Anybody can put their kid into baseball, football, hockey, swimming, whatever. There aren't this mass of trans athletes in quote unquote invading their sport. It's just not a thing.
And look, I think you perfectly laid out that it's not what they're saying it is. And I think they also reveal that they know it's not what they say it is, because they have to constantly lie about the actual problem, not only about the, like, there are literally bans that have been put in place in states that have never dealt, like, even unfairly with a trans athlete. When asked about trans athletes, they have to reference cases in other states. Like, that is how rare it is. You'll note, of course, that they've turned to only talking about like mutilation of kids and all this stuff. They talk about that constantly, despite the fact that that's not what actually happens, because they know that talking seriously about the trans community does not successfully freak people out the way they want. So instead, they start talking about Satan and hell and all of that stuff, trying to freak people out. But again, I don't think that this is a huge winning issue, certainly not a general election, but as we've been saying, they're not trying to win general elections. They're trying to be the craziest Republican to win a primary, I guess. The pundits are trying to be the craziest pundit to generate an audience. That's what they're doing. That's what the incentives are for. Anyway, okay, man, this day is racing by. Okay, we're gonna run to our second break. We come back, we got a lot to get to, including vicious attacks against the great city of New York. So we're gonna jump to that in a second.
Really quick, since you were just there, but Mayor Adams described New York as, quote, his home. How did his home look? Pretty neat and tidy?
No, his home is disgusting. I compared it to what I called Gotham City. The streets are filthy. They're covered with people basically dying on drugs. They can't even stand up. They're falling over. There's so much crime in the city. I can't comprehend how people live there. It was repulsive. It smells bad. And I think it's a terrible place.
Okay, so quite a bit of projection there from Marjorie Greene about her true thoughts about herself. Marjorie Greene was in New York City for, I'm gonna say, 81 minutes. As Emma Vigeland points out, she went through a war zone on her Escalade ride from her Midtown five-star hotel to the courthouse and then to JFK. That's it. She was there not at all. She drove from one place to another, to the airport and home. And so you might think maybe a bit of humility about your experience there, but no, she is just, she knows that she is supposed to go on Fox and denigrate a city where nearly as many people live in just that city as the entire state that she calls home. But screw all of those people because she saw someone on drugs. And so I guess that's it. Waz, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess New York is no Milledgeville, Georgia, John. I'll say that. But you know, just as a native New Yorker, I laugh at this kind of thing. New York City, the greatest city ever known to man, the greatest place on earth, the center of culture, the center of the universe. The idea that we would take offense, or we could take offense to, you know, denigration from the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene. And again, I'm not gonna do the New York thing and talk about the place that she's from as compared to us. I'm not gonna talk about the music, the art, the culture, the food, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna stoop that low. But you know, I see this kind of thing. And I just say, first thing I say, wait, where's this woman from? Oh, okay.
Well, let's bear in mind, there are some places in Georgia with great food and great music and great culture. I doubt she
other
goes
places
to those
exist,
places,
John. But, yes, in New York, we concede that there are other places that exist. We will concede that point. But the idea that the likes of uncultured swine like Marjorie Taylor Greene to come to New York and have a negative thing to say, not gonna accept it. It's not gonna happen, John.
Yeah. Well, look, I will say what I do know about the right is one of their, not the actual hosts, they express this opinion, they don't mean it, but regular conservatives might. They feel like people from the coasts have no respect for them and the places they live. Okay. And in some cases, that's true. And so if they're offended by that, I understand that. But then immediately turn around and attack massive cities where literally millions of people live. And they don't see that to be a problem at all, because again, they weren't expressing a principle in the first place. They're not looking for fairness. They're not looking for balance. They're not looking to treat others as they wish to be treated. They're looking to be treated well and to hit people they dislike as hard as they can. That's what they're trying to do. That's Marjorie Greene. Marjorie Greene doesn't know a damn thing about New York. She didn't see the things. And I'm not saying that there isn't dirt in New York, that there aren't any of those things that she said. She just is lying because she didn't actually see it. And she also, how interested is she in drug overdoses in her district? Nobody has an opioid problem. Nobody's cooking meth. Nobody has fentanyl. No, none of this stuff is happening, I guess, in rural parts of Georgia, just perfectly clean from top to bottom. I know that that's not true because there's no part of America where that's true. All of America has problems, which is why I think we all need to band together to fix those problems. She's not interested in that. And I will also say, I love people like Tucker Carlson being like, hey, would you like to take a moment to just attack this place, New York, which I hate and we all hate and literally all of us live in and have lived in for decades and would never want to move to rural Georgia. But no, we totally hate it. It's so dirty here.
it's just person from middle of nowhere GA can't understand why tens of millions of people flock to New York, why we've produced some of the greatest people this country has ever laid eyes upon. I mean, Who's from Cummings, Georgia? Who? Somebody tell me, please.
No problem with Cummings, Georgia. By the way, Waz, you guys also produced Donald Trump, so you have some explaining to do.
And he's actually from Queens, Jamaica States, not far from where I grew up, honestly. Yeah. It's one of the stains on our legacy, but it's just the exception that proves the rule. Yeah. You know, that's why Donald Trump sticks out that way. We don't tend to produce this kind of scum, but actually, if I'm being honest, we produce a lot of stuff, so you know, a lot of stuff
that
gets
true.
Produced too.
Maybe I'm a little bit defensive. I'm from Bridgeport, Connecticut. I have a lot of great memories of going to New York at various points, seeing shows and stuff like that. The issue, I think, the thing that's biasing me is despite not growing up in New York, I had an open mind about it. Marjorie Greene is not burdened by any positive sort of mind. Anyway,
love this idea that these places that people, again, that everybody wants to move to, these cities in our country, that people literally flock to, pay exorbitant rents and deal with all kind of hardships just because they want to be there. Somebody from some backwater could be like, these people must be crazy to not want to flock to the countryside.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to live in the countryside, that's fine. My brother lives in
God bless.
Outside
God
of Atlanta. Bless. I'm just saying, like, don't, you know, throw stones.
The world needs more cow milkers, John.
there's a lot of milk getting drunk on a daily basis. Okay, really fast, let's jump to this. It's a wild story. A long-serving sheriff in Frederick County, Maryland is now facing a multi-point federal indictment in connection with what was going to be a scheme wherein he would acquire machine guns so that a person that he knows would be able to then rent it out of people, all under complete fraudulent means. You bring them up right here. This is Charles Chuck Austin Jenkins, was doing this scheme with Robert Justin Kropp. They didn't face counts of conspiracy to interfere with the government function and to violate federal law regulating machine guns, among other related charges. So here's what they're going to do. Jenkins is accused of conspiring to illegally buy machine guns through the use of his office's letterhead so that Kropp, a political supporter and owner of the Machine Gun Nest, maybe that's what clued them in, could obtain and rent out the aforementioned firearms to private citizens. The sheriff allegedly used his office's letterhead to falsely attest in law letters to licensed dealers and manufacturers that the machine guns were, quote, dealer sales samples for law enforcement demonstration purposes. The government alleged that the weapons were instead rented out to the Machine Gun Nest customers and raked in six figures in profits to Kropp. If convicted, Jenkins, and Kropp face a maximum sentence of 5 years in federal prison for the conspiracy. Kropp also faces a maximum sentence of 10 years in federal prison for unlawful possession of a machine gun. It's one of those rare actual bits of gun control legislation we have at the federal level. So using your position as a sheriff to fraudulently acquire dangerous military hardware to then personally enrich someone who has given you money is not just, that's not just skirting gun control laws. That's obvious, like that's corruption right there. You got paid, so you're helping him get paid to the tune of six figures. Thank God they were able to stop this. Waz, what do you think?
I mean, I'm happy nobody was hurt in the course of any of this, that, you know, like that this machine gun or machine guns didn't end up in the hands of some bad actors. But yeah, maximum jail sentence of 5 years. Yeah, I think for this level of stupidity and greed, yeah, lock him up. Lock his ass up, John.
Yeah.
We don't need prison reform. Don't abolish the police. Lock him up.
I don't know. I was just the former president Donald Trump was calling for the police to be defunded yesterday, so I'm starting to think. But anyway, yeah. Look, there are places in America where you can actually do this. Like if you go to Vegas or whatever, there are places that you can fire machine guns or whatever. But there are also laws, and you have to abide by them. And the idea that you'd be using your power as a sheriff for this, just for the personal enrichment of people that you know, is a complete abdication of the incredibly limited ethical obligations that you're held under. So we'll see what ends up happening with the legal process. Okay, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you for watching on the linear platforms, listening to the podcast. By the way, helping our last couple of weeks of episodes just shoot up the rankings on Apple. So thank you, everyone. And I appreciate all the new ratings and reviews. I read those on a daily basis. So thank you. Waz and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.